House Committee on Business and Labor, and I'm going to ask people today to be concise and brief, to the point, do not repeat what others have said. We have a whole stack of work today. Today's the last day of House bills, and I want to work through this agenda today as expeditiously and efficiently as possible. So I ask you, once again, to be brief, concise, to the point. Do not repeat what others have said. You would be doing me and this committee and this state a great favor. With that, I'm going to open House Bill 3401. We're public hearing on 3401.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3401 allows a public employer that participates in the public employee's retirement system to request that excess amounts in a side account that is established for lump sum payments either be refunded to the employer or apply to offset contributions to an individual account program if the public employee's retirement board determines that such amounts exceed the amounts that are necessary to fund the employer's actuarial liabilities. There's an emergency clause on the measure effective upon passage. And committee members, in front of you, we have a dash one amendment, which requires that the board determine that if the board determines that a side account does have excessive amounts beyond what is necessary to fund the actuarial liabilities, and as the application of removing those excess amounts does not cause the system or the retirement fund to lose qualification as a qualified government retirement plan, the excess amounts are to be applied to offset contributions to an individual account program. The board is also required to seek a ruling from the Internal Revenue Service on whether the application of excess amounts would cause the system or the retirement fund to lose qualification as a qualified governmental retirement plan.
I would like Ron Naso, Kent Hunsek, Brenda Wilson to come up, and after that, Bob Gladstone, Courtney Wilton, and Paul Cleary. Please. Whoever sits down first, go right ahead and start, please. And we intend to move this bill to rules. It's a speaker's priority bill, and we ran out of time. So that's what my intentions are, and I believe we have to suspend the rules to do that. We will need suspension of rules to do that. Go ahead, folks.
Chair Schaffler, Vice Chairs Barton and Cameron. For the record, my name is Brenda Wilson, and I'm usually before you on behalf of the City of Eugene. But today
Wait a second, Brenda. I called Kent Hunsick, Brenda Wilson, and Ron Naso up. That's who I called up. Everyone comes in the order I call them.
Okay.
But I'll forget it now. But from now on, everyone in this room, unless I call you up to the DS, do not come up here. Because I'm the one that puts people in those chairs. Nothing against you guys. This is how it works in this room. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. I'm normally before you on behalf of the City of Eugene. However, today I'm here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association and the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Prior to going to the City of Eugene, I was the interim administrator of the policy division at the Public Employees Retirement System and was a manager for a number of years and helped take the PERS system through all of the reform legislation that this legislature passed out. House Bill 2401 would allow employers to move their funds that are currently stuck within their site accounts into other component parts of the system. The documents that I provided to you were provided to you by PERS in 2005 when Senate Bill 111 was introduced and passed after it was included in House Bill 3262, which became the vehicle for all PERS legislation in the 2005 legislative session. After the reform legislation, PERS realized and on the advice of their tax attorneys, Ice Miller, that there needed to be a statutory provision that would basically state clearly that the entire system was one system with component parts, and that those component parts included Chapter 238, Tiers 1 and 2, and Chapter 238A, the OPSERP retirement program, and the individual account program. And as you can see on the first document dated July 26, 2005, that they describe what Sections 1 through 25 meant. Now, what PERS said in 2005 is that the bill would clarify that PERS is a single plan for IRS tax qualification purposes composed of various programs. This would allow for simple movement of employer assets to cover liabilities wherever they may arise in the plan. And on the second document that I provided to you, the bottom of page 4, this was a document that was presented as testimony before the House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee by PERS at that time. And it talks about PERS tax qualification. Eichmiller had recommended that we, when I worked for PERS, obtain the statutory provision because what had happened was the Oregon legislature had created a new system in 2003. And employers were issuing public obligation pension bonds to cover Tier 1 and Tier 2 unfunded liabilities. PERS stated when they came to the legislature that the statutory provision was, without question, would make it difficult to move PERS employer assets that may be surplus in one program, such as in Tier 1, to cover liabilities that may accrue in another program, such as under an OPSR. They stated that Senate Bill 111, which, as I stated before, then became House Bill 3262, would clarify that the Oregon, this is top of page 5, the back of that document, would clarify that the Oregon Public Employees Retirement System is a single retirement plan with multiple component programs, Tier 1, Tier 2, OPSR, and the Individual Account Program, in conformance with federal tax qualification categories. The language would allow movement of employer reserve surpluses to cover employer liabilities in any component program, and there was no opposition to the bill at that time. What 2401 does is it clarifies what the 2005 legislative body intended, was that if a surplus existed in part of the system, it could be moved to another component part where a liability still existed. House Bill 2401 would do just that. It would clarify that. There are some concerns that that may not be allowed, but there are provisions that are included in House Bill 2401 that would help alleviate those concerns by requesting a letter of determination from the IRS. It was the intent all along of those side accounts so that the surpluses could be used in other component parts. But that's the end of my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, my name is Kent Hunsaker. I'm the executive director for COSA. You have a handout. It's about 7 or 8 pages. Has PERS rates on it. It is the handout I'm going to refer to. Gives you some background information. And will provide you with a list of the districts that are most likely to use this bill. On the first handout, if you go to the second page, I've underlined the PERS rates for school districts. And the only thing I want to note about that is that all school districts with the 9/11 rates are saving, you can see their rates from 07-09 to 09-11, are saving, the rates are going down. But we have a bunch of districts that start on the yellow in the next section that their PERS rates will actually not change. Because of that, with the budget circumstances that we have right now, those districts have added difficulty in developing a budget without PERS rate savings. You'll notice I've drawn a line on the yellow sheets. All those folks above that line have site accounts that are 7 times their liabilities. And Portland is in that group. We have testimony that you'll be getting from Portland. The next group have assets that are 6 times their liabilities. Gladstone is in that group and will testify. And on the second page of the yellow sheet, North Clackamas has 5.5 times the amount in their site accounts as their liabilities, and Gladstone will testify. The next sheet is the testimony from the Portland School District. Just a couple of highlights from their testimony. They actually show you what their site account is, $786 million. Their liabilities are $109 million, which means they have $678 million in excess of their liabilities that they do not have access to. Now, Portland knows that their account is going down because of the recent earnings with PERS. It'll go down 27%. So, but even with that, this testimony shows that their site account will be huge. And this bill would allow them to pay the 6% IAP, which amounts to about $16 million. You'll notice at the bottom what Portland is talking about as a deficit in their budget. So $16 million would be very helpful to them in terms of that deficit. I wanted to mention one final thing, and that is that as we talk about this bill and the districts that might utilize this bill to access their site account, it would remove less than 1% of the amount of funds that are in the site account. So the threat on a lot of money coming out of the site accounts for PERS is very minimal here. And then finally, that this bill requires IRS approval before it can happen. One thing about that is that we would look for a way to speed up that approval because we believe that that it is it would naturally be approved. And we'd like to look for a way to speed up that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Bob Stewart. I'm superintendent of Gladstone School District. Just let me tell you a little bit about our story and how we came about purchasing PERS bonds and where we are today. In 2003, we struggled a great deal with the question of whether we should or should not make this purchase because of the long-term implications of it. After several months of asking lots of questions, meeting with lots of people that could give us some concrete information, we decided it was a good investment. In April 2003, we purchased $16.5 million of bonds to cover our unfunded liability. By December of 2003, because of changes that this body made in the PERS system and because of some robust returns on the stock market, our account balance had grown to $19.3 million. By December 2004, it had grown to $21.1. By December 2005, to $22.8. By December 2006, to $24.8. And by December 2007, to $25.6. Our principal had been paid down to $15 million. We had over a $10 million surplus in actual dollars in the account. I approached Senator Kurt Schrader at the time and asked him if there was any methods that we could make some changes in the system to allow us access to that money, with the original thought that maybe we could just pay off our bonds and still have a $10 million account balance within the PERS system. That was not possible. So then we began to explore other options for how we could maybe look at using some of those funds to offset some of our costs, which brought up the question of the IAPs and paying the employer contribution to the IAPs. And the question that we really want to have this body help us with is that, and that you are moving forward with on some rules, is the question of how can this be done, and the second question of how can it can be done quickly, and how can we ask our congressional delegation to give us some support in that. Even with the 26% loss or 27% loss in the PERS system now, we will still have an account balance of roughly $18.5 million, $3.5 million more than our actual debt. So we're just asking this body to move this forward as quickly as possible and help us out. Thank you.
Mr. Naso.
Chair Saltzler, members of the committee, I'm Ron.
Before you start, Ron. Ron is the superintendent of my school district, where in North Clackamas, where my daughter goes to Clackamas High School, and they're doing a great job, and she gets straight A's because she's brilliant, just like her mom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Naso is also among my favorite constituents.
So there you go.
I say that to all
you,
the constituents.
You need to provide any further testimony, Mr. Naso.
My case is made.
Go ahead.
Anyway, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, our financial situation and what has happened because of the bonding of our PERS obligations is pretty much the same story that that Gladstone and Portland will tell and many other school districts like it. We have a significant surplus. I would simply ask, this legislation is enabling legislation. I want to say to you that it does not guarantee that the North Clackamas School District would in fact use that money. That decision has to be made on the basis of the risks that we encumber in that process, and we recognize that there are risks. We have an obligation that we have bonded for. The North Clackamas School District has that obligation. And I make that mention because in my conversations over the last 2 years with PERS, there has been conversation consistently about, gee, there are risks in this. When we bonded, we took that risk. We take risks all the time in our world. All we're asking is that we have the ability, the enablement, if you would, in this bill to take advantage of a possible opportunity if we deem that that's in the best interest of the North Clackamas School District. Certainly, in the economic environment that we live in, we are looking at the possibilities of having to do extreme damage to that school district that Representative Schauffler sends his daughter to. If these dollars can help us to mitigate that damage, that will be an advantage to us and I think to the state of Oregon. And we certainly support this bill and the language that's put forward.
Any questions of these good people? All righty. Sorry I snapped at everybody for coming up here out of order. Well, not really, but anyway, it's just one of those days. You're doing good. Okay. All right, Courtney Wilton and Paul Cleary. Courtney, Mr. Wilton, I hope I got that right.
Yep, you did get it right.
Go ahead.
Okay. Chair Schauffler, members of the committee, my name is Courtney Wilton. I work for Clackamas Community College. And Oregon's community colleges support this legislation, all have financed their PERS liabilities in one way or the other, all have site accounts, and we simply see this as a way for us to hopefully better manage our PERS costs in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cleary.
Chair Schauffler, members of the committee, Paul Cleary, Executive Director of PERS. Want to let you know we have worked with the bill proponents on the Dash 1 amendments to address the concerns that we had with the bill as initially introduced. We're good to go with the Dash 1 amendments. I would want to temper a little bit of enthusiasm here, having dealt with IRS private letter rulings. They work on their own time frame there. We'll work with proponents. We'll work with the congressional delegation to try to speed that up, but it's doubtful that we're going to hear from them for a year or so. But we'll do everything we can there. And we'll also use our most current valuations on this. We won't make loans based on 2006 house appraisals.
Any questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cleary, first of all, I appreciate your cooperation with this bill. I have a question actually regarding the fiscal impact your agency submitted. It came out at $175,000, broken down into $50,000 to acquire the IRS private letter ruling and $125,000 for system modifications. And could you help me? Can you explain how those numbers approximately derived? It struck me as $50,000 to acquire a letter ruling. Even if you hire Perkins Coie, it would be on the very expensive end of the spectrum.
Chair Schauffler, Representative Barton, we hire Ice Miller. I can't tell how they compare to Perkins Coie, but we did have an experience with a recent private letter ruling. I believe it was somewhere around $46,000, so it's in the ballpark. And then the system estimates are just the costs of our opening up our IT system. We're going through a conversion right now on that, and we just want to make sure people are aware that there are expenses associated with that. We will look at working with the proponents on whether or not we get an amendment when this bill goes into rules to possibly take this out of the site accounts of the people that are interested in this, and that could be a way to cover those expenses.
Go ahead. Brief follow-up, Mr. Chair. So, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Of course, any time an agency prepares a fiscal statement, it's at least as much art as science. We recognize
right.
that.
Right.
And so really, these fiscal statements are ultimately in a range.
Right.
It could a range of plausible outcomes.
Right.
So you could be perfectly accurate in any way. Would you say, based on for example, the fact that your recent letter cost $46,000, would you say that this is perhaps on the high end of the range of...
Chair Schaffler, Representative Barton, I don't think that the private letter ruling would necessarily be on the high end, and the estimate on the system cost is just that, an estimate.
Thank you.
Any further questions by these very good people? Once again, this is going to go to rules, assuming we have the votes to send it there without recommendation. Thank you very much. Anyone else want to speak to this 3401, House Bill 3401? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3401. Actually, Representative Barton, I just want to recommend that move the rules as it is.
Yes, sir.
Open work session 3401.
Mr. Chair?
Without recommendation.
I move House Bill 3401 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3401 to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, and we heard testimony that the dash ones were to replace the bill and that there had been some agreements. Is there a reason we don't want to send it down there with the dash ones in it so they get the right
they
signal?
They can just have the whole pile down there to deal with. That's what we're doing. That's the motion. If there's any, is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing no opposition, so moved. Close work session 3401. I'm going to open a public hearing, House Bill 3017.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3017 requires contractors on public improvement contracts to pay each month into the State Apprenticeship and Training Education Fund an amount equivalent to 5 cents for every hour that a contractor, the contractor's employees, subcontractors, and the subcontractor's employees work on a public improvement contract. There is an emergency clause in the measure effect upon passage. You have in front of you, members, a dash one amendment which replaces the original measure altogether. The dash one amendment is almost identical to the dash one amendment for House Bill 2838, which was discussed on the April 15th public hearing. The dash one requires ODOT to state in any advertisement or solicitation in every public improvement contract that a contractor and subcontractor must meet 10% of their total labor with workers enrolled in a state-approved apprenticeship program and establishes exemptions for the requirement, such as if too few apprentices are available for hire or a local joint committee for an apprenticeable occupation does not exist in Oregon. There is an emergency clause effective on the 91st date after sine die of this session.
And members, so you know, the chair is interested in the dash ones. When we go to work session, that's the motion I'll be entertaining. And it will require rule suspension to move it. And we have votes. We have them. If we don't, we don't. I'm waiting for the proponent of the amendment to come in and talk to us. Is he out there? Is he coming? Hanging out there, then we just don't need to do anything today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
May I speak to the bill?
Yeah, I was. Go right ahead, Representative.
While you're waiting.
And then also on deck, Jim Francisconi, Al DeVita, Cherry Harris. You want to speak from your representative? Or
That'd be fine, Mr. Chair.
So those three folks, you want to come on up?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3017 is a bill I introduced, and the underlying bill tried to deal with an issue that we've been hearing about in the Workforce Subcommittee for quite some time about trying to provide opportunities for people and kids, especially with our high schools, somewhat like the ACE Academy, and trying to figure out a way we could get some funding back into vocational education and providing some sort of outreach from apprenticeship programs to our high schools. And it was simply a nickel an hour, which I think equates to $8 a month for each employee on these public projects, making it a public policy of the state of Oregon that we reinvest in workforce training. We've heard from business and industry alike that this is a huge issue. We need to start getting some hands-on experience and some outreach for apprenticeship programs and getting people interested in vocational education and the trades. Of course, I am supportive of the underlying bill on this, And as you mentioned, the Dash 1 amendment is similar to 2838-1 amendment, which I believe the chair has put together to require a 10% apprenticeship utilization on ODOT projects. I think that it essentially should apply to all public projects, not just ODOT projects. And I'm a little bit concerned that there are some pretty major loopholes that in this bill that would basically allow contractors not to comply with the requirements. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Folks, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, member of the committee. My name is Jim Francisconi. First, as a citizen, thanks you all for your service to the state during a really difficult time. I'm here this morning on behalf of John Little and Pete Savage from the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters, Nelda Wilson from the Operating Engineers Local 701, and also Lynn Lairback from the Teamsters Local 37, although the Operating Engineers will testify. And thank you also for most of you for meeting with us or your staffs. We appreciated that very much. There's kind of three principles here as to why we believe that these apprenticeship requirements should apply to all projects. First is the importance of trying to accomplish multiple objectives with legislation. Here in this case, when you pass the stimulus bills, both federally and state, the objective should be not only as passing the stimulus, but making sure everyone benefits. In this case, apprenticeship requirements is one of the few ways that you can make sure that Oregonians can actually work on those projects that are publicly funded. Secondly, it creates opportunities for women and people of color to also work on those projects. The second important principle is just jobs. It's all about jobs, and you stand for that. So the opportunity is also making sure everybody can benefit from jobs. And then the third principle is one of the best economic development tools in addition to capital projects is making sure we have a workforce strategy. So we understand this has been a divisive issue, and it's time to unite regarding a common public good. So in that spirit, these clients would prefer to have 15% or even 20% requirements, which is the standard, at least in the Portland metropolitan area already, and with not only the city of Portland, but a variety of private employers. Many of the private employers have agreed to 20% apprenticeship requirements already on private projects, not even those that are publicly funded. But in the spirit of compromise here, folks have agreed, these clients have agreed and others, to go down to 10%, half of what many private projects are already doing, including private companies, with the idea of over a reasonable period of time ramping it up. The other compromise to 15%, the other compromise that people are willing to do is to say, okay, let's make that 10% goal across all crafts and not even craft specific, even though some of these clients will not benefit. And then you can look at the individual. So in other words, if overall goals of 10% are met on apprentices across the board, then there wouldn't be penalties if one craft doesn't make it. There's another significant compromise. But the idea of only singling out ODOT doesn't make any sense from a public policy standpoint or from a workforce standpoint. From a workforce standpoint, you want apprentices who are working on ODOT projects once they're older to be able to go to another project so that they can get the skill to become journeymen. And second of all, why are you signaling? We understand there's been a history with ODOT, but all the other public projects should have the same requirements. It doesn't, frankly, make any sense. So with the spirit of compromise here, we just need a little leadership, and we appreciate the idea of at least moving the ball forward on ODOT, but now's the time to kind of come together. And so that's what we are requesting, and that's what we are asking of you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Cherry Harris, with the Operating Engineers, Local 701, Chair Schaffler, and the members of the committee. We stand this morning in support of the original Bill 2838 and with the suggested amendments that my partner here beside me has just suggested. We see this current bill. You know, here's our main goal. We want to get more opportunities for all Oregonians, real sustainable job opportunities for people. We want to increase opportunities for women and people of color in the trades. The way to do that is to require apprentice ratios, apprentice utilization ratios, on all publicly funded projects. We see this current bill in its current form as a step backwards, since ODOT already is has a performance record of 25% apprentice ratios. So what difference, why would it make any sense to step backwards from that in a state requirement? We want to see this expand to all publicly funded jobs. Thank you.
Jerry, that's 25% in the aggregate, right?
I believe so, yes.
Thank you. Go ahead, Al.
Chairman Schaffler, good morning. My name is Al DeVita. I'm the training director for the Oregon Laborers Employers Training Program. In general, we support apprenticeship. Our goal is 20% as a craft. So we would agree that 10% falls short. In general, we support the principles of the original bill, which were on all projects. To have apprenticeship requirements on ODOT projects is a step in the right direction, but we don't feel ODOT is the right agency to be enforcing apprenticeship requirements. And just from personal experience, sitting at the table with both organizations, they don't use the same terminology. BOLI should be enforcing apprenticeship requirements, and so we would not be in support of this just on ODOT projects or ODOT enforcing this. Thank you.
And folks, I understand your what you want to do and your intention, and I agree with it. I agree also that ODOT has not done all they can to do for apprenticeship that we've asked them to do. The agency that is going to make and force ODOT and everybody else and their brother to comply with any law is this agency, the legislature, and we failed. I think this bill, as amended, dash ones, I believe it is, does, as you said, move the ball forward. Is it everything? No, it's not. But you know what? I'll tell you, ODOT, I know they don't want to be bullied, but they, if this bill becomes law, they are going to meet the standards in this. And we can talk about 20% or whatever percent aggregate. Al, the laborers are not reaching that in ODOT projects, and they're not reaching 10% either in the aggregate, as far as I know, unless I have misinformation, which is possible. And I am an incrementalist. You want to come in here and bite off a whole loaf? I don't know how many times I've seen it fail. And we have to move step by step towards the goals that we believe in and that we support, not try and do it all at once. If we tried to do it all at once, folks, and you know this, if you've been around, there'd be a whole lot more people in this room. And we can talk about working with industry all we want. It's a slow government. American democracy is a slow-moving machine. Sometimes that's good. I think usually it's good, but it's always frustrating. So it saddens me to have to disagree with people that I have the greatest respect for on this language. But once again, I'm entertaining the dash ones. That's the only thing that's going to move out of this committee today. If you want to respond to anything I just said, please feel free to do so.
Well, you know, at some risk of peril, I'm going to actually do that, Chair. But I guess, just like you said, and I appreciate what you said, which is ODOT responds to this committee and the legislature, so do the other public agencies that can meet a 10% requirement. Secondly, it is also important for this body, especially now, to not just do symbolic actions, but to do things that make a difference. The average in the ODOT projects is at 25%. The recent projects are 25%.
In aggregate, Mr. Francis.
But still, their average is over the 10%. So this bill doesn't accomplish what a 10% across all projects could do, which is still reasonable because the private employers, for the most part, have already adopted a 20%, many of them. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Chair.
By all means.
I'd just like to just go back to enforcement of the requirement, and I really disagree that ODOT is the right agency to do the enforcement. We had an issue last year, and if you're only looking at certified payroll, then you're not taking in the big picture. ODOT typically bundles jobs, so if you have a bridge package with three separate bridges, and they're looking at certified payroll, and you see three laborers and three apprentices, even if they're working on separate crews on separate bridges, if you're looking at certified payroll, that is not an effective way to do it. So.
I can appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any questions of these good people? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Well, Bob Shiprack, you want to come up? And Gene Wahlhorn. Go ahead, Bob.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades Council. I think you want me to comment on the dash ones.
I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure. I was asked several months ago to provide some insight as to what kind of a bill might pass the legislature this session on apprenticeship, and pointed out that for at least the last 3 years, some of this involved in the heavy highway construction for ODOT have been meeting over an apprenticeship program that was originally instituted by the legislature prior to the OTIA 3 bridge program through a budget note through the Ways and Means Committee. It's been going through fits and starts for 3 years. And I'll just, for the committee and the public behind me, the program is not working as well as it should be. There is resistance by some contractors to the program. There's been, I think, problems in the enforcement end of this, in enforcing, or I shouldn't say force, but getting the contractors to employ the crafts. One of the things that I suggested to the chair in this bill would be to have craft-specific 10% language, because as is mentioned, you can get to 10%, but that doesn't mean that you're employing a variety of crafts on highway construction. My main concern in looking at the data, and you should have the data in front of you that I looked at, just released from ODOT just a couple weeks ago, that show that the cement masons, laborers, and operators are not at 10%. It's been a real problem. I've got complaints from some of the apprenticeship coordinators that they're not even sure their programs can continue unless there's a real effort to require craft-specific utilization of apprentices. So that's the goal here. This is not landmark legislation, I'll grant you that. But before, a lot of my coordinators have said, before you go expanding it, why don't we try and get the program that we've got in place now to work the way it was intended? And I'll just stop there.
Mr. Lauren, go ahead.
Hello, my name is Gene Lawhorn. I'm from Salem here. I'm a rank and file carpenter and delegate from my local 247. I'm also the author of a labor history curriculum book that's been taught in the Willamette Carpenter Training Center. I'm no professional lobbyist or I only come down here every now and then, and I think it's real important for us to support this bill. I don't think that the state is living up to its apprenticeship regards. There's just not enough being done to keep apprentices trained out there in the field. And as a carpenter, I give up, I think, like 10 cents per hour. But my wages when I work for apprenticeship training. and it goes up every year. And I think it's only fair that the state and contractors can kick in their fair share for apprentices, especially seeing how I feel like this committee is being used to attack prevailing wages. I think the state could fairly kick in a little bit more for
Mr. Lawhorn. Wait, stop right there. This committee is not being used to attack prevailing wages. And don't say things like that again if you want to keep talking into that microphone.
Well,
so continue with your testimony.
I'm sorry we disagree, Representative Schaeffler. Trying to voice my opinion, and I'm just a citizen. And I'm just stating the way I feel.
Okay, forgive me. Carry on.
And that I feel like if you want people like me to participate in this process, we should have our say without being attacked.
With due respect to you, sir, you just attacked me by saying this committee is attacking prevailing wage, used to attack prevailing wage. That is inaccurate, in my opinion. Now, if you want to disagree with that opinion, go right ahead.
I do disagree.
I would appreciate it if you testified to the substance of the bill today.
The substance of the bill today, I'm saying, what I'm trying to say here, sir, and to this body is, if that we need to support apprentices training, and that if we're going to have one bill go after prevailing wage, we should have a bill to somehow offset that balance for apprentices, for the training of apprentices, for the training of workers, so that workers benefit. That's what I feel like this body should be doing, is benefiting workers, not trying to tear down their wages or tear down their training.
Mr. Chair,
that's all I got to say.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to clarify, perhaps, and you're entitled to your opinion, I can appreciate that, but is it your contention that this committee is being used as a platform for those that want to speak against prevailing wage? Because currently, right now, I can't think of a prevailing wage vote that I've taken against. And so I can appreciate what the chair is thinking here, but is that your contention that there's folks that are coming in speaking against prevailing wage?
Not on this bill. No,
I understand. But as a whole, when you attack the committee and when you voice your concern, that's what this committee has done.
I don't feel like I'm attacking the committee, sir. I mean,
so just for clarification,
don't take that as I'm just talking about. I guess I'm just talking about trying to the big picture. I think it's 2430 or 2340, whatever that bill is that you guys are going to be on the work session today. I'm talking about as a whole that there needs to be a balance. If you guys are going to go after prevailing wage in one aspect, why can't we get...
Okay. Mr. Chair, just one quick follow-up. And sir, when you say when you're going to go after prevailing wage, that is where I take offense. And I think there's a lot of folks on this committee that would, too, to go after prevailing... The way you're wording that, sir, and you're entitled, but I've got to tell you, that is completely incorrect. It is an incorrect statement. It may be your opinion, and I would love to engage in further conversation outside this room, specifically what you're concerned about that this body has done against prevailing wage. And I would like to follow up with you on that.
Is there any further questions of these good gentlemen? Representative Holford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the testimony. I think Mr. Longhorn is speaking of supporting apprenticeship in general and maybe not specifically of the Dash 1 amendment in this bill. But I guess my questions for Mr. Shipwreck, Bob, from the Building Trades Council, you're making a statement that you're supporting this Dash 1 amendment to this bill. And it occurs to me that the people that work on the highway projects, primarily cement masons, laborers, operators, pile drivers, and carpenters, are all opposed to this Dash 1 amendment and support House Bill 2838 with apprenticeship requirements on all public projects, not just ODOT projects. And I might add that IBW 48 also told me they support House Bill 2838 on all projects as well. From Cliff Davis told me that last week, I believe, and Joe Esmond was up here testifying in favor of that bill. And so
If there's been a change happen since then, it's hard for me to believe the Building Trades Council is supporting this Dash 1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my council executive board has twice, because I wanted to be very clear as to my direction, twice has told me that they would object to and not support the full-blown bill. And I don't know if that has changed, as was reiterated just a short time ago. I just, for members of the community, I got people that don't even believe in apprentice utilization at all. And the fact that, why are we forcing contractors to train? I got people that think that. So you got a wide range of opinions. I do know that I can only look at the numbers and see there are crafts that are not getting the proper number of apprenticeable hours on ODOT work. This bill would move us toward that. If they don't like it, then they can express their opinions, I guess.
Any further questions of these good people? Well, Representative Thatcher, have you written down right here?
Thank you. Bob, to the Dash 1s, I had a question specifically to line 18 to 20, talking about requiring ODOT to advertise in all their advertising for projects that all contractors and subcontractors shall participate in a program employing not less than 10% of the total hours that workers in each apprenticeable occupation work. It sounds like it is divided up, classification specific.
Yes, that is indeed, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is the intent of the Dash 1 amendments. You are correct. That is a change from what we have now, which is just 10% across the board. This would be craft specific.
It is correct.
So that all the crafts can get 10% of their apprentices out there, not just a couple.
Okay, and then I'm just trying to, I have a question to the feasibility for smaller projects and smaller subcontractors specifically. Contractors generally are bigger, but there could also apply to them. It says the contractor may meet the requirement directly or through one or more subcontractors, but then the subcontractors don't really have anywhere to turn. So, to me, it doesn't look like that's the case. Can you comment on that?
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Oftentimes, a general contractor on a freeway, highway job does not employ, for instance, iron workers. They may not employ operating engineers. They use subcontractors then to do that work. What the intent of that language is that the general contractor would recognize their subs that are going to be hired to perform that work to meet the goals.
Okay, and one more question. If you have 10%, that would mean pretty much one in 10 people. Some people don't even have 10 people out there on their project to begin with, so I'm not sure how that would work.
Mr. Chairman, the intent of the amendments, and I think there are some, I don't know if it's in the Dash 1 or not, would be to go by the Bowley apprenticeship ratio, which is typically three journeymen to one apprentice.
I guess I just didn't see that, Mr. Chair, so it wasn't real clear.
Any further questions?
May I say thanks to Representative Holley for clarifying my position on this. I do agree with what he had to say. And I think just to answer Representative Thatcher's question, I think on apprenticeship jobs where I work, we have a minimum of just, we have to have at least one apprentice for every five journeymen as a minimum. Normally we have two per every five, but it should be at least one or two apprentices per every 10, just to balance it out. And that's for safety, too. I've seen plenty of cases where we've had nothing but jobs worked with apprentices, and then somebody gets hurt because there's not an experienced hand. So that's one of the important reasons why we have to have apprenticeship training. It's basically for safety, too. So I'm sorry for the confusion. I'm sorry for insulting anybody here.
Mr. Lawrence, look, I want you to feel comfortable coming for this committee, but this isn't just aimed at you. Anyone who uses those microphones to, in my opinion, inaccurately attack this committee will be denied the use of that microphone. I am not going to sit here and be attacked. If people want to come up here and disagree with me and say they think I'm wrong, that's one thing. But to say that this committee is attacking prevailing wage is simply not true. It's defamatory, it's offensive, and I don't like it. and I just will not be tolerate. I wouldn't allow it to be done to any of my members, to inaccuracies be thrown at them. I will not allow that.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would register disagreement with that. I think people have the right to come here and say what they wish. I think they have the right to be wrong, and I think there's nothing wrong with telling them they're wrong if that's what we believe. And I have concerns about censoring a public mic. I think people have the right to come and say ridiculous things, and some of which are ridiculous, and some of which get my Irish temper way out of whack. I just have a hard time saying they can't say what they want to say. They may get an earful back.
That's what they're getting, Representative. And they has every right to come up here and say that Mike Schaffler doesn't drink beer and that he doesn't have green eyes. Doesn't mean I have to sit here and take it, and I'm not going to take it.
Well, you don't support tax on it. I'm fine with
thank
that.
Thank you, thank you, sir. We're in agreement on that. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Well, we're going to see where we're going with this right now. Anyone else want to speak to the House Bill 3017? Bill, come on up.
Thank you, Chair. Committee, for the record, Bill Clitting, Carpenters and Industrial Workers. I don't want to get anybody's air up here, but the reason I step forward is, you know, this nation in the last 20 years, we've become number 5 in the world for students in math and science. And overall education-wise, we are number 26 in the world now. And as an industrial nation, our apprenticeship program has always lagged behind. If we're not going to be on top of the world as far as education, math, and science, we should be on top of the world for apprenticeship programs, because the people in this country have to have a work someplace. And the major hang-up right now is we need to create jobs. We need to create jobs in this state so journeymen and apprentices can work together. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. Any questions, Mr. Clutic? Thank you, sir. Anyone else today? I think we spent enough time on this one. I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3017. Would you go out and drive, Teresa? Would you please go out and get the rest of the committee?
Yes.
So glad today is here.
Definitely Monday morning, Mr. Chair.
It's not. I'm glad and happy for every day, but especially today.
Did you make a motion?
Not yet.
Okay, I'm going to open work session House Bill 3017, Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones to House Bill 3017.
Representative Edwards moves dash one amendment into House Bill 3017. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative Kanemer.
Mr. Chairman, I don't feel like to support the dash ones.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Nor I, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion on... Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I do have some outstanding questions on it that I don't feel comfortable supporting them right now. So
that's okay. And Representative Barton?
Yes, no need for comment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any more opposition to the motion? Well,
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be opposed to the motion.
The motion fails. Close the work session, House Bill 3017. And I'm going to open a work session on another fun topic, House Bill 2430.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we have had the last public hearing on House Bill 2430 on the 24th. The original measure defines building construction and modifies the definition of residential construction for purposes of applying prevailing wage rates to projects predominantly provide affordable housing. There's emergency costs effective upon passage. The Dash 1 amendment was given out to the members on Friday. It clarifies the intent of the measure by clarifying the types of projects that are exempt from PWR law and establishes the criteria for applying prevailing wage to a mixed-use commercial and residential project that predominantly provides affordable housing, and also establishes rulemaking authority for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. There is an emergency clause in the amendment effective upon passage.
And members, it was asked how many, or if any, if there was a list of projects that were being held up, slowed, or in jeopardy, or in question, or would have an impact without this legislation. You should have been provided a list of 8. And then... Okay, I would appreciate, yes? Oh, folks, we need rule suspension to move this bill. It requires a two-thirds,
yes.
Vote.
I should point out, committee members, there is a no fiscal or no revenue impact on the original measure, and the Dash 1 amendment merely clarifies the criteria for the application or non-application of prevailing wage rate law and the rulemaking authority.
I would entertain a motion to suspend the rules for the purposes of working House Bill 2430 for amending and passing, correct?
That is correct.
I guess we need to make the motion and we have a discussion about the motion. So moved. Okay, Representative Cameron moves suspension of the rules so that we can work House Bill 2430. Is there any discussion on the motion to suspend the rules? Is there any opposition on the motion to suspend the rules? All right, seeing none, so moved. Representative Dash Ones.
Mr. Chair, what was the purpose of the...
I guess you just closed
would
the motion. Go over the...
I heard two-thirds vote. What?
Yeah, we're fine.
To suspend the rules, and there was no opposition, therefore it's unanimous to suspend the rules.
So now that the rules have been suspended, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Cameron, and now we can have a work session on the bill and discuss the Dash 1 amendment. And
yeah. Is everyone understanding what's going on?
The two-thirds was for the suspension of the rules.
Yes, exactly. Okay, yeah, it's right, just procedural. Just, making sure we have...
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1s to 2430. Representative Cameron moves House Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 2430. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Any opposition to the motion to amend the bill? Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I'll support the amendment, but I'm not going to be supporting House Bill 2438.
Thank you, Representative. Any other opposition to the motion? So far, I see no opposition to the motion. All right, so I move. Representative?
Yep. Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2430 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2430 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. I have really been thinking about this a great deal over the weekend. I've ultimately concluded that I am not going to support this bill today. I've not yet received any compelling evidence that this is indeed necessary for affordable housing projects to go forward. We received, I remember there was testimony saying that there were 5 affordable housing projects that were hung up based on this issue. We then, when asked for follow-up, we received a list of 8 that would benefit from this bill, but that's very different than 8 projects that would not be built without this bill being passed. Without that evidence, I cannot support this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a lot of concern. It's not that I don't support affordable housing, but when you get these mixed-use construction projects, they typically fall into what I would consider a commercial project, and as such, I find it very difficult to combine those and say prevailing wage will not apply. So I'm going to be a no on this bill. I think it's a step backwards for Oregon workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other... Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had late last week indicated that I was opposed to this bill, and largely because we were receiving mixed messages from a number of the building trades on this issue. Over the weekend, I think there's been a number of unions who have moved closer to a consensus on that bill. While I personally am not at all comfortable with the bill, out of respect for those who have been able to find common ground, I am going to vote for this and reserve my right to change my vote on the floor.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion on the bill or the motion? All right, well then, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Brewer?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
No.
Representative
Escobar? Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
No.
Vice Chair Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative
Wick?
Aye.
Chair Shaw?
Aye. Chair will carry the bill. Close work session, House Bill 2430. Open work session, House Bill 3345.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard House Bill 3345 on Friday the 24th. The measure modifies circumstances under which attorney fees may be rewarded in workers' compensation claims and requires the adjustment of the amount of certain attorney fees based upon the increase of the average weekly wage. During the public hearing, you were presented, committee members, a -1 amendment which clarifies the intent of the measure and addresses concerns and resolves concerns raised by individuals during the process of the bill. The -1 amendment in the original bill was approved by MLAC, and we were waiting for the paperwork on this, and there's a minimal fiscal impact on the measure, no revenue impact.
We do not have the impact statements.
We do, yes, Mr. Chair. We are ready to go on this.
I would entertain a motion to
Mr. Chair, I'll move the -1s to House Bill 3345.
Representative Cameron moves -1 amendment, House Bill 3345. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3345 as amended to the House floor with the due pass.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 3345 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. We have a volunteer to carry this on the floor.
Okay.
Definitely does well. Thank you very much. I'm going to jump around here, folks. So we need paperwork on House Bills 2457, 3462, 3475. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3201.
So, Chair, Committee members, House Bill 3201 requires the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to refuse the issuance of license if there are reasonable grounds for refusal and also cancel changes in nature of problems that are caused by licensed premises that are grounds for the commission to either refuse issuing a license or to cancel or suspend the license. During the work session on Friday, you were presented a -1-2 amendment. Both replace the measure. The -1 amendment, which is what the Chair wished to have analysis done on for fiscal and revenue, modifies one of the current statutory reasons for refusing to license an OLCC applicant for there's been a history of serious and persistent problems in the immediate area of the premises that is related to the sale or service of alcohol under the license privilege. The -1 also establishes that if a premises experienced serious persistent problems as outlined under the amendment provisions, the Commission can replace restrictions on an on-premise sales license for the purpose of preventing the continuation of those problems. And the amendment only is applicable to OLCC on-premise licensees.
I'll entertain a motion to move -1s in the bill.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Edwards,
move the -1s into House Bill 3201.
Representative Edwards moves -1 amendment to House Bill 3201. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'll be supporting the amendment, but not the bill today.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Any further discussion on the motion? I'm going to wait a moment here. good representative is out there. If not, we're moving on. All right. Any opposition to the motion?
To amend.
Motion to amend. All right, so move. Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3201 as amended to the floor, due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Mr. Chair, Dash 1s make it a better bill, but it's still not where it needs to be. Thank you, Representative. And I believe there will be time, possibly, to do something. It still has another whole House to go through, and I know there's a lot of concerns about this, but I'm supportive of the bill. Any further questions? All right, then the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Kettler?
Excused.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Badger?
No.
Representative Wick?
Aye.
Chair Schaffler?
Aye, and Representative Kochek will carry the bill. Close work session, House Bill 3201. Open work session, House Bill 2910.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2910 excludes sole practitioners from conducting professional real estate activity that is licensed by the real estate agency and permits individuals who are engaged in professional real estate activity as of a specified date to continue to engage in real estate activity as a professional real estate broker. During the work session on April 20th, it was discovered that there need to be further tweaks to the amendment. So you have in front of you, committee members, a Dash 3 amendment that should be address all concerns from real estate agency and from the Association of Realtors. Keith is actually passing out. We don't have the fiscal analysis on the Dash 3. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 3, but the real estate agency was gracious enough to forward to me what they have submitted to legislative fiscal. So if we want to move forward, we can do a real suspension. But
and for the record, it will, according to this analysis, will have no fiscal impact. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is what's stated on the form, Mr. Chair.
So with that, and this is what the fiscal office will base their analysis on for their impact statement, which we will get before it's heard on the floor. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
So in light of that, I would appreciate and entertain a motion to suspend the rules for the purposes of working House Bill 2910.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. I would entertain a motion to move House Bill 2910 as amended. Oh, we need Dash
3.
Chair, I'll move the Dash 3s to House Bill 2910. Representative Cameron moves the Dash 3 amendment, House Bill 2910. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Representative Holden. Point of order, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure. You made a motion to suspend the rules, but you didn't ask for objections, so I think you better
get well, let me back all the way up.
Let me withdraw my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cameron, thank you for pointing it out, Representative. It's very important we do according to Hoyle. The motion has been withdrawn. I would entertain a motion to suspend the rules for the purposes of hearing and working House Bill 2910.
So moved.
Is there any discussion? Thank you, Representative. I do appreciate that. I really do. And I'm not going to cut your microphone on yet.
Good time.
Anyway, nor am I going to cut anyone's microphone off, even union carpenters. Being a union laborer, I'm tempted, but I won't do that. Anyway, any further discussion on the motion to suspend the rules? All right, seeing none. Representative, Dash 3s.
You should ask for objection first, I think.
Is there any objection?
Object to my motion.
I see no objection. So we don't have to go through that again. Deja vu all over again.
Rules are suspended.
I'm so grateful for this committee. They really keep a close eye on me. Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, based on the rule suspension, I'd ask that we move the Dash 3s into House Bill 2910.
Based on the rule suspension without objection, Representative Cameron moves Dash 3 amendment in House Bill 2910. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so moved, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2910 to the floor, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2910 as amended floor to pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to this motion? Seeing none, so moved. The chair will carry that one too. Close work session, House Bill 2910. Open a work session of House Bill 3122.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3122 is the Honest Pint Bill. Allows the OLCC full on-premises sales or limited on-premise sales licensee to obtain upon the inspection or re-inspection of premises verification of the capacity of pint glasses used for draught malt beverages. And also allows DHS to charge a fee for verification and for OLCC to charge a fee for the decal not to exceed the cost of providing this service. During the public hearing on April 3rd, you were presented a Dash 1 amendment which clarifies that the glasses used at the premises are capable of holding at least 16 ounces when dispensed under standard conditions. We were waiting for the fiscal analysis on the bill with the Dash 1. There is a fiscal statement that was distributed. There is a minimal fiscal. The reason why LFO chose to issue this versus a minimal fiscal impact is that they wanted to clarify that the methodology for the fee, the estimated fee that OLCC would charge to participants in this program, and also to point out that by intergovernmental agreement between DHS and local county departments, the fee for the inspection would be transferred to county health departments, and they would set that fee.
So county health departments can adjust that fee if they have an additional expense?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Kenner, yes, that is correct.
I would entertain a motion to move Bill 4 with a due pass recommendation.
We need to move the Dash 1.
Dash one. Representative,
would you like to move the...
Of course, Mr. Chair. I'll move the Dash 1s to House Bill 3122.
Representative 3120. Barton moves Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3122. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Was this on the...
Amendment.
On amendments, no.
Is there any opposition to the motion to amend?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to
oppose all the way.
Thank you, Representative.
As I...
Thank you, Representative. All right, in that case, the clerk will call the roll on the amendment.
Representative
Hemmer?
Aye.
Representative
Colby? Aye.
Representative Esteval?
No.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair
Shoffler? Aye. The amendment is moved. I would entertain a motion to move the bill to the floor with due pass recommendation as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3122 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3122 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
For reasons that I'm failing to remember, I was absent on the day that we had this before us in a public hearing, and I've not been lobbied by one person about this bill. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, just... Yeah, not an honest pint, and I'm a non-drinker, by the way, so I don't even know what the real big problem is, other than maybe you're getting short of an ounce or two of beer. I'm not sure. But, Mr. Chair, if you can indulge me for just a moment.
Please.
What exactly, on that day of public hearing, was there a large outcry from our business community that they could not support this and do this, or is this more about the fiscal that might be awarded from the state for this to be managed?
Mr. Chair, the sponsor of the bill
is right over here, Representative Bailey. Come on up. Just be forewarned, the chair's in a cranky mood.
Well, and I didn't say I opposed it, Mr. Chair, just for...
No, I'm just
this is important. Some of us will agree with this comment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, for the record, Jules Bailey, representing House District 42. And, Mr. Chair, perhaps an honest pint might help.
Amen,
I thought you might carry this over till 5 p.m. Representative Matthews... To your question, my understanding is that the Oregon Restaurant Association, as an association, is neutral on the bill. The reason we're bringing the bill forward is to create a marketing opportunity for local businesses that choose to serve an honest pint. There are There is a perception that there are some establishments, it's unknown how many, that serve pints that come in what are sometimes referred to as cheater pints. So you have a thick base on the pint glass, and it appears for all intents and purposes to be a normal pint glass, but it actually holds less than a full 16 ounces. So what we're saying is, rather than going out and creating a new regulatory regime or coming down hard on these businesses, we want to create a marketing opportunity for the businesses that are choosing to serve a pint that is 16 ounces or more. And you might imagine a future in which you have an iPhone application or something where you could click on a button and it would tell you all the honest pint establishments in your vicinity, and you could go stop in and enjoy a cold one. Or not you if you don't drink, but a person could.
That's true. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative, for coming up here. Is there anything today that stops a vendor from that serves an honest pint from putting an honest pint sticker in their window? It says, "We serve an honest pint."
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I suppose they could come up with their own sticker, but what we are hoping to have here is a way to independently measure and verify that, in fact, that's true, to give the public confidence that, in fact, that sticker does refer to the pint glasses that they serve, and also to have some consistency and uniformity across the sticker, across the state. So a little bit of a branding image and a way to market Oregon's craft brewing industry as a real model for the nation.
As in, you know, disarmament discussions is trust but verify.
I couldn't have said it better, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, if I may, Mr.
Please.
Chair. If somebody told me they're serving an honest pint and in fact they were not, do I have any legal grounds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I assume you're referring to if this program becomes law.
No, today. If I say I'm selling a 16-ounce honest pint, and in fact, I'm selling a 14-ounce.
That's a good question, Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron. I would defer to the attorneys who know more than I do on this. My guess would be that if a business just put up a sign in a window that said, "I serve an honest pint," that there probably wouldn't be recourse there. I don't know that to be true. I'm not a lawyer.
Thank you.
Any further question? Representative Thatcher.
Well, just a quick, kind of building on what Representative Cameron was saying, I appreciate what you're doing, and I think that is a great marketing opportunity. I'm just not sure if we need to drag government into it at this point, and maybe we can develop our own, a new OHP, the Organization of Honest Pints, amongst industry, and they can, have their own sticker and do this. And they could, employ a third party, and it would have, the effect of having the integrity of the state behind it, but without having the state behind it. So I appreciate where you're going, but I just don't want to drag the state in, especially right now, everything going on. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, I definitely appreciate the sentiment, and the intention here was to set up a coordination mechanism. That was the reason for the state involvement, because you have different agencies that do different things, OLCC and the health departments, and to set up just an easy way to do this for them to pay a fee to cover the cost. And we didn't want to create an additional burden. What we wanted to do was set up a program that would also be essentially a fee-driven additional revenue system stream to cover the cost of this program so that they can keep folks on board, too.
And before I go to Representative Holby, this is strictly voluntary. Nobody has to do anything.
That's exactly right. This is an absolutely voluntary program. We see this as a marketing opportunity. As one of the people in the industry said, I don't think you'll get a single person signing up for this, but I happen to disagree, and I think that we will get a lot of people signing up for this, and it could be a great branding and marketing opportunity for the state.
Maybe we'll find out. Representative Holvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify that that we're not imposing, a fee on the county health departments. That they'll be able to cover their costs within this bill structure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, we've asked legislative counsel to write the bill in a way, and we believe it is written in a way that allows for all the agencies involved to fully cover their costs through the fee. So we're not asking for an unfunded mandate here.
And this committee is always concerned and watching out for the health and welfare of our partners in local government.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I should also point to Representative Holvey. At the last paragraph in the fiscal analysis, ORS 624510 establishes the authority for intergovernmental agreements of things of this nature. So that is already existing.
Thank you, Committee Administrator Teresa Van Winkle. And, Mr. Chair, I was rather skeptical of this bill to start with, but now that I see it's a voluntary program and that we're not passing on expenses to the county, I will be supporting it. Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just looking at my notes from the earlier, one of the questions, and I don't see it still addressed in the amendments, was tomorrow my competitor across the street has a health inspection. They get the sticker. Mine's not up for 11 months. So my competitor has a sticker in the window for 11 months. Why I do not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Warren, I can only hope that this program becomes popular enough that a few-month delay in putting a sticker up in a window means a difference. I think that might be a situation in which you could potentially put up your own sign there or other ways to address it.
Mr. Chair, where are we in the motion here? Is this still the
dash? We've moved the dash.
So this is just on the bill,
yes.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and it's a great example of what we're doing here by passing bills like this that take the private market and put it in the government's hand, and now we put certain people at a competitive advantage, disadvantage. The volunteer program that still our county health departments have to go out and invest to get the equipment, and if one establishment in Marion County says, I want this, my county health department now has to get this equipment. This is just something that I'm going to adamantly be opposed to in this building. We're supposed to be here trying to deal with 265,000 unemployed Oregonians. This is not the kind of thing that's going to help those people find jobs.
To that representative, I mean, we have weights and measures in the state. It's nothing new. And it's voluntary, and one plastic measuring cup is not major equipment. So I appreciate your concern, though, and I agree with your thoughts on what we're trying to do to get people back to work. Representative Bailey.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, we do have a lot of unemployed people in this state, and our intention here was that marketing a unique organ industry might be a way to put some of those people back to work.
And they know how to do it really well. They're very successful without us.
I think you have a good point. Before you go to Representative Cantimer, there was some excellent writing, I didn't agree with all of it, on the need to develop more water in this state. That's the direction we need to go in. Representative Cantimer.
Mr. Chairman, it's interesting we're spending so much time on this bill, and I guess, and I'm guilty of that too. I have such ambivalence. I think out of courtesy to the sponsor, I'm going to support the bill, but I think it's something that could be done voluntarily and probably in some ways better done that way. So,
thank you, Representative. Any further questions of the good representative?
Thank you, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr.
If we have the votes, you'll be carrying the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I would entertain a motion to move the bill to the floor as amended with due pass recommendation.
We've already made that motion.
Oh, we are under that motion. Is there any further discussion on the motion to move the bill to the floor? Is there any opposition to the motion?
Yes.
I believe we've already heard there is.
Therefore, do I need to be any clearer, Mr. Chair?
You're almost as clear as I am, Representative. Jansen, would you please call the roll?
Representative Kinneberg.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
No.
Vice Chair Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron.
No.
Almost missed it.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Representative Wilkes.
Aye.
Chair Schaffer.
Aye. Representative Bailey will carry the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Close the work session, House Bill 3122. Open a work session, House Bill 3219.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3219 describes the method by which an owner or person in charge of a hotel or motel may comply with the statutory requirement to post signs giving notice of smoking laws. There is no revenue or fiscal impact on the measure, and no amendments in front of you as we ran out of time to have the requested amendment drafted. That was discussed in our public hearing on the 22nd.
Do we have fiscal
amendment? Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. No fiscal.
Folks, I want to move this bill forward. I think it has, first of all, it has merit. They've decided to do it in rule, but Ms. McNitt, who represents some theater artsy people down in Ashland,
wants to use this as a vehicle to allow them to use smoking tools on stage. And I think that has merit. If the will of the committee is to move this out, I would entertain a motion. If not, then so be it. I would entertain a motion to Representative.
Correct me wrong. You don't need an amendment, Chair.
No.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3219 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3219 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Matthews.
I'll be supporting this only because I know when they put you live up there on screen or in theater, they're going to have some sort of an instrument. But I want to say, beyond that, I certainly hope their intention is to post that this will be utilized during that play, too, so that those attending, I know it's not in the bill, it'll get discussed over in the Senate, but I'll be supporting this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved, and I will carry this bill because it needs explanation on the floor, and I don't want to saddle someone else with that. We're ready to go on this
yes,
one?
Yes, we are, Mr. Chair.
That is the amended version.
Yes, that's correct.
What's the dash on?
Dash two.
I'm going to open a... We don't need any rule of suspension.
No, we have fine.
Everything we need.
Yes, we have.
Open a support session on House Bill 2950.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2950 was last heard on April 16th. The original measure limits either the State Fire Marshal, OTHER, or the local approved authority to one inspection of alteration or construction of the building or structure for compliance with fire and life safety code or local fire and safety code. During the hearing, an outline of a proposed amendment was discussed, in which you have in front of you the dash two. The dash two reorganizes the boards within the Building Codes Division of DCBS. What it does is that it establishes the duties, membership, terms of office, and operations for the Residential and Manufactured Structures Board and the Construction Industry Energy Board, and in turn abolishes the Manufactured Structures and Parks Advisory Board and the Residential Structures Board. You have in front of, actually, we're going to make copies of this. We just received the analysis on the amendment. There's a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the dash two.
Members, do you remember this would be the underlying bill is being taken out and we are putting in the creation of an energy board? Mark, you want to come on up here and remind us of what we're doing here, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Long. I'm the Administrator of State Building Codes. First of all, I would like to thank the Chair for his leadership on this issue. We think the idea of a consensus-based expedited review for energy issues is an important jobs issue. It's going to help Oregon position itself for many things that are coming up in the solar, vehicle, and wind arena around the state. This particular bill establishes a consensus-based expedited review system for electrical matters that deal with energy efficiency. It gets the players involved in those issues, the residential, the commercial, and the electrical folks all at the table through a 7-member panel, whereas if they can get to an agreement on a matter, they can kick that item out to my organization for rule or code adoption in a streamlined approach and basically avoid as much as 6 months to a year-long delay. One of the pieces that makes this work is blending some of the boards together to give greater focus on manufactured housing issues and residential issues around affordable housing and prefabricated structure. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Mr. Chair, the dash twos are brought to you as a modification from the hearing we had roughly about a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago on the issue, if you recall, in one of the evening sessions.
I just want to say I'm sorry to the fire marshal for having to follow this bill for three months and diligently being in the office or in the room watching it. Things happen, but I do appreciate your diligence and that of your staff. And then, Mark, to you and the Building Codes Department, I want every effort to be made that the manufactured housing industry and those consumers that purchase them remain whole somewhere, and that their issues and their concerns and the things they need done on whatever board they land in is paid careful attention to, as always. I really want to stress that.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Can we hear from them?
Pardon me?
Can we hear from them?
We're just in a work session. We're moving on. I've heard enough. Representative Canemar.
I just wanted to confirm, so this still abolishes the Manufactured Housing Board?
Mr. Chair, Representative Canemar, it takes the Manufactured Housing Board and the Residential Board and blends them together. I've worked with both representatives of that group to put spots on here. You'll see that there are two spots related to manufactured housing, and then we've made a commitment on the low-income side for the public member slot that's vacant to get some representation there in the manufactured housing area as well, consumer side.
So is Mr. Miner okay with this then?
I don't think it's for Mark to speak for Mr. Miner. Mr. Miner, why don't you come right on up here? I think historically, weren't they combined before and split out? Is that incorrect?
Mr. Chair, other boards have been. I'm not sure the history on this one.
Well, Don, go ahead and shed some
Chair,
light on this.
Members of the committee, Don Miner for Manufactured Housing Association. Actually, that board has existed since, I think, 1976. To my knowledge, they were never combined. Our first choice, of course, would be to leave the status quo, but assuming the committee wants to go forward with this measure, we've been working with Mark and on the Dash 2 amendments, that it probably needs some additional clarification in the Senate to make clear that there's a manufacturer of manufactured homes, a retailer of manufactured homes. The language goes partway towards that, but not fully. But we're willing to work with them on the other side to accomplish that, and I think we have a commitment from the agency to make sure that that's accomplished.
As much as those words pain me on any bill, I do appreciate it, and I will definitely make a point of following up on that myself. And I do, as I stated earlier, share your concerns. I want you all to be kept whole somewhere. I mean, we're abolishing a board, but your issues I want to be addressed just as if they are now, even if it's under a different heading.
We work very closely with those parties to make sure that there's no change in authority or any of those kind of things so we can accomplish that goal, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kinnemer.
So, Mr. Miner, you're neutral or more better on this bill than as it is amended?
Again, I think our first choice is to leave things as they are, but if it's going to go forward, I think that we can work that out so long as there's persons who represent the manufactured housing interests on that board.
And that, Mark, we've discussed at length, and yes. I share those concerns, and I agree with you, Mr. Miner.
Okay.
Any further questions of these gentlemen? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many did we start with on each board, and what are we exactly ending up with as the board once we combine them? So we had how many members with the manufactured, how many in the residential, and then how many we're going to end up total, and how many of those members will be from each?
Sure. Before you answer that, Mark, the reason we need to combine two boards is so that we don't end up with a fiscal costing the state more money to create an energy board. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Right now, we have seven boards. This allows us to continue
seven
to...
Seven boards?
Yeah, that we work with at the Building Codes Division.
Oh. Okay. I just meant these two boards.
Yeah, this allows us to keep that same level by creating the one that's going to focus on the energy issues, that expedited process. To answer your question, I'm going to go off the top of my head. I believe there are 14 members on the Manufactured Housing Board. There are 9 on the Residential Board. This board blends and has 11, and we've identified 3 of those spots on the manufactured housing side to make sure that the manufacturers, dealers, and consumer interests are represented out of the Manufactured Structures Board. You'll need to know that of the 14, not all of them are related to the manufactured housing industry.
Any further questions of these gentlemen? And once again, these concerns will be stated on the floor and be followed up with our colleagues in the Senate, because I want people that live in, build, and manufacture manufactured homes, and those that live in them to be represented, and their issues and concerns to be addressed and attended to just as seamlessly as if nothing had happened. So, any further questions of these guys?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay. I would entertain a motion for the Dash 2 amendments.
I'll move the dash twos, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barton moves dash two amendment to House Bill 2950. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2950 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2950 to the floor with due pass recommendation as amended. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Kanemer.
Just a comment. You know, manufactured housing has always been an issue, but, well, always. It's been a big issue in the legislature across the years. And I have mixed feelings, but with the objections to what's going on being pulled by Mr. Minor, I'll support the bill.
And you're exactly right, Representative. It is a huge issue. It's been a painful issue at times, and we need to be aware of it, even sympathetic to a lot of the issues that folks that live in manufacturing housing are struggling with. So I share your concerns. That being said, energy clearly is a huge issue. It is overshadowing many important issues in this state, and because we have no money, we definitely wanted to avoid a fiscal, and this looked like a path to getting from A to B, and that's why I'm supportive of what's going on. That being said, this is the third time now I'll say that I want to make sure all of those who manufacture, distribute, and live in manufactured housing's concerns be addressed as thoroughly and diligently as they have been within their own separate board in a seamless fashion into the creation of this new combined board. So that's the intention of this representative, and I believe of everyone who will vote for this bill. Is there any opposition, any further discussion on the motion, first of all? Representative Campbell.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think just because of what you just said in the testimony, I'm going to be no here in committee just so that we continue to have that discussion with the possibility that I may change my vote on the House floor.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? With that, Tamsin, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Ginnemer?
Aye.
Representative
Colby? Everything else we're waiting on.
Representative Esterholm?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
We're ready to go.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Wynn?
Aye.
Chair
Shockley? Aye. I believe I'll carry that one on the floor, too, just to describe what's going on. Close the work session. Just a moment, please, folks. Bear with me. This is Judy Stevers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And we have everything we need. Right?
Yeah, I don't have copies for the members. This
could you please go get... Can we get copies made in a timely fashion? Well, we have that. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3162.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3162 makes a discrimination against employee who reports a violation of state or federal laws, rules, or regulations in unlawful employment practice. During the public hearing on April 10th, we presented a -1 amendment from the bill's proponents, which adds a new provision that clarifies that an employee can file a civil action in circuit court as outlined in current statute and also establishes that the measure applies to actions that are commenced on or after the effective date. We just received the... there is no revenue impact on the original bill or the -1. We just received a fiscal statement on the -1, which is being copied right now, and in which there is a indeterminate minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion. We will get that paperwork to you in a moment, but I would entertain a motion to move the -1 into the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the -1 into House Bill 3162.
Representative Barton moves -1 amendment into House Bill 3162. Is there any discussion on the motion? Now, there was no opposition to this bill, if I remember right. Any opposition to the motion?
What does the -1 do?
want to repeat.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Resident Cameron. It clarifies that the employee can file a civil action in circuit court, which is currently outlined in statute. Public employees, for instance, that whistleblow have protections and they can't file an action. This would extend that, those same provisions to people affected by the provisions of this measure, as amended.
Any further discussion on the motion to amend? Any opposition to the amendment? The motion to amend. Seeing none, so move. Representative?
Chair, I'll move House Bill 3162 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3162 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Chair.
Is Representative?
I feel uncomfortable with this. I feel like I'm in one of those catches where, gee, yeah, you don't want to have people protected if I vote against this, but I don't feel comfortable with the language. I just think it's opening it up too much to... I guess perhaps being abused, especially in these times, and I'm going to have to be a no for now.
Thank you, Representative. And, you know, I can appreciate that. There's potential for disgruntled employees to do all kinds of things. That being said, I really think we need, you know, today, in this day and age, we have so many people cheating out there, and the legitimate business people are picking up the slack, and I think this is a tool that allows us to get at those folks that aren't complying with the law. And non-compliance is one thing. People, I probably don't comply with every law out of ignorance myself, but that's not the people we're talking about. I'm talking about the radical scoff laws. We need to be able to have employees feel comfortable coming forth. Imagine if Arthur Anderson or Enron had employees that were comfortable coming forth saying, I don't think this is quite right. And then you can go right into a lot of the other problems we're having with financial issues here in America, where I think people are just afraid. And I don't blame them. If you have a mortgage and children, of course you're not going to step forward if you feel threatened to lose your job. Not only lose your job, but potentially be blackballed in whatever industry you're in. I think this is an excellent tool. I do share your concerns. I appreciate your concerns, and I'm glad you voiced them. Any further discussion on the motion to move to the floor?
Mr. Chair, this is a tough bill because as a business person, I think we need to take care of the businesses that abuse our employees. However, that said, this bill passes, and I'll describe a scenario. We have a bad employee, on the other hand, that an employer has given a counseling review to, a couple of counseling reviews to, and is about ready to terminate that employee, and all that employee has to do under this bill is come in and say, you know what, I think you're in an overtime violation, or I think you have a OSHA violation. And what does the employer do? Does the employer continue to terminate that employee, or does the employer now say, oops, this person just brought something to my attention, however I was going to terminate them this afternoon? It does put an employer in a very difficult position. And as we heard in testimony when this bill originally came up, an employee today can go to any one of those agencies and report that violation, and those agencies will keep that confidential and will do the investigation necessary to make sure that that employer is complying with those things. So I think this may open up potential litigation. It puts employers, again, in a position very difficult to do business in some circumstances, not all, but in very difficult circumstances. So we're going to be a no here in committee today, and we'll just see where this goes on the floor.
I appreciate your comments. The scenario spelled out, though, I believe could be happen now. If you were going to terminate an employee, they could currently say, all right, I'm going to make something up or turn you in for something. They could currently do that. And it's easy for me to talk. But if I had an employee I was going to fire and I knew they were a bum, I'd say, go ahead, and I'd fire them on Christmas Eve with their new baby in their hand.
So I just personally, I don't see the scenario you spelled out could happen now.
But Mr. Chair,
you just said that.
Under today's laws, this opens up a whole other avenue to now sue me and have sue an employer and have that person to go through a whole bunch of legal expenses to defend what they actually did was right.
Yeah. Just so you know that.
I appreciate your concerns. Representative Kanemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know. I've been through this a couple of times. I'm trying to figure it out. It seems to change some things, and I don't have any, you know, of course, want people protected. I wondered, is there anyone from NFIB or AOI to speak to this issue? Because there has not been opposition testimony, to my knowledge.
And Representative, this is a public hearing process, and not even the all-powerful chair can deny anyone the use of those microphones. So, and you know what? They've had every opportunity to come forth. And I just think it's time. It's a time to talk, a time to vote, and now we're going to vote. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, private employees already have, they're already, whistleblower protections already exist, as you eloquently stated. This is really not a wholesale expansion of access to litigation or creating entirely new causes of action, whole cloth. This really is actually a fairly modest, I think, fix to the current system, which is presumably why in public hearing it went through without opposition. It's far more modest, I think, than others perceive it, my humble opinion.
Any further discussion on... We're in a motion to move to the floor, correct? Any further discussion on the motion? Having heard opposition, Tamson, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Kanemer?
Aye.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Aye. And I believe Representative Stiegler would like to carry this bill. She's the chief sponsor. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3162. Teresa, you want to explain where we're at here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. We have heard 11 of our 18 bills, so we are still waiting for fiscals and revenues on the others. So I think according to our agenda, we were going to work until 10 o'clock, and if need be, which I think that's the case, come back in. I believe we stated 5:30, but it's my understanding consumer protection, I'll put you on the spot, Chair Hovey, will be in this room until 6. Is that correct?
That is incorrect.
Okay.
We will be out of your way at 5:30.
At 5:30, okay.
And maybe before.
Maybe before, okay. And actually, we're in hearing room map. I apologize. We actually were moved.
So I won't be in your way anyway. And members, so. I would really appreciate everyone to be here at 5:30. The good chair is going to have my chair all warmed up for me.
Mr. Chair, actually, we're going to be in hearing room F instead of E.
Oh, forgive me. We will be in hearing room
F.
Be there at 5:30. We are working whatever we have, and what we don't have, we ain't working. And then we're going to adjourn. So there you go.
Representative.
Health care has been long scheduled for that.
That's correct, sir.
I don't know. I'll probably be there, and if you need my vote, let me know.
We can
accommodate you. Because there's everyone, and I appreciate you pointing that out. Anything for the good of the order? Oh, I want to say one more thing. I have to agree with my colleague from Canby area, Representative Kanemer. People have a right to speak at this microphone. I will not deny anyone that right. But I promise you, I will exercise my right to interject and tell them when I think they're wrong when they come up and say things like this chair and committee are attacking prevailing wage or any other issue that I disagree with them on. But the Representative Kanemer was exactly right, and I appreciate him pointing that out to me and making me think more clearly because my feelings were greatly hurt.
When will you begin to do
with,
that?
With that...